4, Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Afghan blast death toll now up to 80. The Islamic State terror group claimed credit for a bomb attack in Kabul Saturday that killed at least 80 people and wounded hundreds of others during a mass protest rally. A website linked to Islamic State claimed responsibility for the violence. A statement said the attack was meant to warn Afghanistan's ethnic Hazaras, who were mostly Shiite, to stop joining the Syrian government in its fight against the terror group. An Afghan Interior Ministry statement says three suicide bombers assaulted the peaceful demonstrators. It said one of them detonated his device among the protesters. One mistakenly killed only himself, while a third was shot dead by security forces guarding the rally. Chancellor Angela Merkel said the German security services will do everything possible to protect the security and freedom of all people in Germany in the wake of two attacks in less than a week.
Wir alle trauern mit schwerem Herzen
She says such an evening and such a night is difficult to bear for all of us, and it's even more difficult to bear because we've had so much terrible news in so few days. She went on to say that they will find out what exactly lay behind the crime in Munich and that they will not rest until they have precise knowledge about the two incidents that have plagued her country over the last week. Speaking to reporters Saturday in Berlin, Merkel said that Friday's deadly rampage in Munich, which she called a night of terror, and Monday's attack on board a train were carried out in places where any of us could have been and have left many Germans wondering where exactly is safe. An 18-year-old German Iranian man opened fire in a crowded shopping mall in Munich on Friday night, killing nine people and wounding more than a dozen others. This is VOA News. President Obama says the U.S. had no knowledge of or involvement in last week's coup attempt in Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has accused U.S.-based Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen or his followers of being behind the failed bid to take over the Turkish government on July the 15th. In the aftermath of the failed coup, Turkish officials say they've detained 10,400 people. The African Union launched the African Passport this week at its summit meeting in Rwanda. The idea is to allow better movement of people to stimulate African economies, but details of who will get the passport and what the benefits are still need to be worked out, as Nick Long reports from Kigali.
Outgoing AU Commission Chairperson Kuzazana Dlamini Zuma gave the first two passports to the African Union Chairman and Chadian President Idriss Deby and to her host, the President of Rwanda, Paul Kagame. She told heads of state there had been overwhelming requests for the passport from many of their citizens.
So we would therefore suggest for your consideration as we launch the African passport today that we agree to create conditions in the member states to issue the passport to their citizens.
The AU's deputy chairperson, Erastus Mwensha, told media that no member state has opposed the passport proposal, but the AU's trade and industry commissioner, Fatima Haramachil, said a few member states don't recognize it. Nick Long for VOA News, Kigali.
Judging by social media, few Africans disapprove of the passport. Many are skeptical they will ever get one, and many see the initiatives as a step in the right direction. In this week's weekly President's Address, Senator Elizabeth Warren joined President Obama to discuss how far we've come since the financial crisis when, according to them, the recklessness of Wall Street caused millions of Americans to lose their jobs, homes, and savings. President Obama gave a brief history of the crisis.
8 years ago, after some big banks made irresponsible and risky bets with your money, we almost slipped into another Great Depression. While the recklessness started on Wall Street, it didn't take long before it led to real pain for folks on Main Street.
As a result of these reforms, the first ever Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was established.
But these new rules are making our financial system more transparent. They're getting rid of a lot of fine print, and they're making sure that if the bank screws up, you have someone to call so you don't get stuck with the bill.
The Republican response to the weekly address was given by Reince Priebus, who is the chairman of the Republican National Committee.
Democrats want the federal government to impose one-size-fits-all policies on everybody. We say an independent people deserves individual solutions. The bottom line is, Republicans believe in better.
And this is Joe Palca, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The police finally confirmed 10 people dead, including the shooter. There are 27 people injured, 10 of them in a critical state.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel calls for an emergency meeting following Friday's shooting at the Munich Mall.
It will not be there because there are arrangements that are pending, security arrangements for his safety in Juba, and to avoid further confrontation with the forces loyal to President Salva Kiir.
South Sudanese President Salva Kiir's ultimatum to first Vice President Dr. Riek Machar expires Saturday.
Ordinary guy speaking from Banjul is very, very angry. And then now people, including the international community, have started condemning this study, describing it as very unconstitutional.
And Amnesty International condemns the conviction of Gambian opposition leader Usainu Dabo. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has called for an emergency meeting of her Security Council Saturday in Berlin. This following the shooting at the Munich Mall that left at least 9 people dead and many injured. At a news conference earlier on Saturday, the police chief said all security restrictions imposed Friday evening have now been lifted. For more on the latest development, I reached VOA's Shahida Yakub in Munich.
Well, the latest was the press conference. The police finally confirmed 10 people dead, including the shooter. There are 27 people injured, 10 of them in a critical state. Actually, this person who did the attack, he managed to shoot only 3 people. The rest of the people who were injured, they had some other injuries not related to his shooting. Now, it is confirmed that he's 18-year-old who had German and it's Iranian nationality. Apparently, he was really interested in the Rampage because police searched his house and found a lot of material related to Rampage. Apparently, he was on medication. He was treated with some antidepressants, as far as police could say. They don't connect it to ISIS or to any terrorist group. They say it was a lone shooter without any political motive. That's the latest so far.
So what happened to the area surrounding the mall that the shooting occurred? You met with the people. What did they tell you?
Well, the people are in a state of shock and disbelief. Basically, they group around certain areas which are not secluded by the police, and you see people in distress. Some of them want to talk to press. A lot of them don't. They still cry. The area is empty. I was told by the local taxi drivers that normally it's buzzing there because of the mall. And because it's weekend, normally the streets are full of people. But, hey, not today. It's really empty. All the shops in the area are closed except the pharmacy.
Has the police said what motivated this 18-year-old to go on this shooting spree?
They couldn't say exactly why, but they suspect that he had some psychological problems. Probably he suffered from loneliness, but when they searched his apartment, they found materials related to Rampage, even a book, something like Rampage, Why Students Kill. So obviously he was really interested in that sort of thing. He was probably, police suspect that he was psychologically unstable. Now, he bought a gun. The gun was a pistol, and it was obtained illegally, police says, because the serial number of that gun was scratched. He was armed with roughly 300 bullets. He was apparently really planning this attack in advance. But they, at the moment, they do exclude any link to the terrorist organization.
Are the police describing this as a terrorist attack or not yet?
No, at the moment, police excluded all the links with ISIS or any other terror organization. They do not think that this is a politically motivated attack. They, at the moment, they tend to believe that it was related to his psychological problems rather than it was a political statement of him being killed. He actually killed himself while he was shooting at people. So obviously he was planning this in advance. There are rumors that he posted a Facebook message saying that there's a huge discount at McDonald's so people could come so he could kill more people. But police is still investigating this message.
Some eyewitnesses were allegedly saying that he made some pronouncement before he started shooting. What have you heard so far about it?
I haven't heard anything about it. The police didn't comment about it, but police asked everyone who filmed on the mobile phones anything related to the shooting to give them evidence so they could investigate more. At the moment, it's too early to say. And it's like it's outskirts, this area in the outskirts of Munich, you understand, is like a very residential area. And the only big thing in the area is that huge shopping mall. You know, people are so shocked over there. You could see people walking in the total distress.
Did the police indicate when or the next time they're going to come up with more information about their investigation?
No, they didn't say anything, but they just said that they will keep the press posted and they give press the messages so anyone who is here knows where to go. And they're constantly updating. But for today, we don't expect any more statements from them.
That view is Shahida Yakub. She spoke with me from Munich, Germany. The spokesman for the South Sudanese Affairs Vice President says Dr. Riek Machar is unlikely to return to Juba to meet President Salva Kiir despite an ultimatum issued by Kiir set to expire on Saturday. President Kiir invited Machar for a meeting to resolve the recent clashes between two opposition groups loyal to both of them, which left at least 300 people dead and many injured. James Gadet Dak, spokesman for Riek Machar, told me Kiir's ultimatum is unfortunate and regrettable.
It will not be there because there are arrangements that are pending, secured arrangements for his safety in Juba and to avoid further confrontation with the forces loyal to President Salva Kiir. And this is the proposed deployment of a third force, which has been endorsed by the African Union, that the third force should be deployed in Juba to support the rival forces. And if this is done, then the first vice president should now return to Juba and continue with the meeting with President Salva Kiir. As for the ultimatum of 48 hours, which is supposed to expire on Saturday, this is unreasonable and it is also unnecessary because the first vice president is willing to return to Juba, only that he wants his safety to be granted, only that he wants to ensure that President Salva's forces will not attack his forces again and for the violence not to erupt again. So when the security issue is addressed, it will come. So there is no need to give an ultimatum. Let them wait for the third party force to be deployed in Juba. Then the first vice president will return.
Ezekiel Williams, a member of the SPLM-IO, seemed to be speaking a lot in Juba. You are speaking on behalf of the first vice president, but from Nairobi. It appears your movement is divided. So who should the world listen to in this case?
The world should listen to the office of the first vice president because he's the person we are talking about. The first vice president said he's coming back to Juba to continue with meetings with President Salva Kiir, and is waiting for the deployment of the third force. And the world has accepted the deployment of the third force. IGAD has endorsed it, African Union has endorsed it, and the United Nations also has proposed it. So the first vice president is speaking the same language with the rest of the world, that there is need for a third party force. So the world should listen to what the first vice president is saying, what his office is saying, and not what is being said by an individual or two or three individuals who happen to be, speaking the language of President Salva Kiir. So they don't represent the SPLM-IO. They don't represent the SPLM-IO's leadership. They represent themselves if there are two or three.
Why blame President Salva Kiir when your movement appears to be divided? Yet the issue of the full implementation of the peace agreement that the SPLM-IO has been harping on is at a standstill right now without the presence of the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, to be there to ensure its full implementation. So why blame the president for it?
First of all, the movement of the SPLM-IO is not divided. The leadership is together. We have institutions. We have the political bureau, which is loyal to the first vice president, who is their chairperson. We have the National Liberation Council, that is loyal to the first vice president, their chairperson. So the movement is not divided. The fact that one or two person talk the language of President Salva Kiir doesn't mean that we are divided. Yes, I blame President Salva Kiir because he's the one who encourages the two persons, including Thabane Ndegai, to agitate the movement that first vice president should return to Juba, and if he doesn't come, then he should be replaced. So President Salva Kiir is the one who agitates the situation together with Thabane Ndegai. So it is not the movement which is divided. The institutions are intact and are loyal to the first vice president.
But the government is saying that it's not true and that those are not founded and these are internal problems that you guys need to resolve instead of blaming it on the government.
Well, if it is internal problem, then let President Salva Kiir not be talking of replacing Dr. Riek Machar or giving ultimatum. If it is internal problem, let them leave it to the SPLM-IO. But the fact that President Salva Kiir has given 48-hour ultimatum to the first vice president and is talking or replacing him, so this indicates that he should is involved and he should be blamed. So let him not interfere in our internal affairs. Let us deal with our two or three persons who agitate the situation. The rest of the institutions and the rest of the leadership is intact.
Why is the first vice president not talking? Where is he? Is he in Juba? Has he fled?
He is around Juba. He has left his base, which was in the suburb of Juba, the Jebel Kujur area. He has left, but he's around Juba. And the purpose for leaving Juba was to avoid further escalation of the situation because President Salva Kiir is not in control of his forces. He's not in control of even his border guards inside the palace and around the palace. So if Dr. Machar was to be around Juba, he would have been attacked again by President Salva Kiir's forces. So he's staying away from Juba until the third force is deployed and then he can come back.
James Gadet Dak is the spokesman for the South Sudanese First Vice President, Dr. Riek Machar. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, a humanitarian organization says more than 2,000 South Sudanese refugees are arriving in northern Uganda every day. Save the Children says 90% are women and children. Despite the announcement of a July 11th ceasefire in South Sudan, the numbers have steadily increased. VOA's Jody Kapwa has more.
Save the Children humanitarian manager Justine Abenaitwe says most of the refugees are coming from South Sudan's eastern Equatoria state. Smaller numbers are arriving from Juba. She spoke to VOA from the Ugandan border town of Adjumani.
The reason why they are fleeing South Sudan is because of the increased violence, raping of women and girl children, looting of their properties that majorly happens in the night. They say it is unknown gunmen.
The refugees say the gunmen have also killed people during their attacks.
The refugees are in a state of fear. Most of them are very highly traumatized because of the experience that they have gone through.
Some of the South Sudanese refugees, including children, have gunshot wounds. Many children are not accompanied by their parents. Abenaitwe says they became separated at checkpoints set up by armed groups in South Sudan. The Save the Children official says it's very crowded and congested at the Ugandan border.
There are so many people, over 20,000 people at the border, and trying to ensure that they access the refugee collection points that the government of Uganda has put there to be able to receive services from the humanitarian services.
After the South Sudanese refugees cross into Uganda at Adjumani. They are taken to a reception center about 30 kilometers from the border. Once registered, they are transported another 15 kilometers to a camp that can hold about 30,000 people. Save the Children is trying to keep families together or to reunite them if they became separated. It's also providing counseling to help them deal with trauma. Families are given blankets and household goods. Often they arrive in Uganda with little more than the clothes they're wearing. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
International human rights groups have condemned the conviction of a Gambian opposition leader, Usainu Dabo, and 18 others were this week jailed 3 years for taking part in an unauthorized demonstration. Amnesty International described the sentences as part of the continuing downward spiral for human rights in Gambia. The convictions come as political tensions rise ahead of the country's December elections. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached Saine Marine, a Gambian journalist in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, to find out the reaction to these convictions.
The leader of the Gambia's biggest opposition party, called the United Democratic Party, leader Usainu Dabo, along with 18 others, were convicted and sentenced by a Nigerian judge to 3 years imprisonment. And after the verdict, there were widespread condemnations from Gambians from all walks of life. Some described the verdict as undemocratic and total barbaric due to the fact that the protest in which they went for is a constitutional right, and then their constitutional rights have been infringed by the court that's supposed to protect them. So Gambians are very, very angry with the verdict, and ordinary guys speaking from Banjul is very, very angry. And then now people, including the international community, have started condemning the verdict, describing it as very unconstitutional.
Yes, even many human rights organizations have condemned the verdict. But what's the reaction of the government?
Amnesty International also issued a statement immediately after the conviction. They condemn it unequivocally and order for their unconditional release from prison.
How is the situation in Banjul, given this contradiction, given this condemnation?
The situation in Banjul, as I said, is very tense, because when these people were convicted, that day there was heavy security presence within Banjul. We received reports that the agents stationed snipers on rooftops at the high court. So all that was to instill fear in the public, because when the trial started, people from all walk of life will travel to the island capital, Banjul. But the security agent will stop them at the bridge, asking them about their ID cards to delay them from entering the court. So when the verdict was read yesterday, there was a the situation was very tense, to an extent that people were thinking there would be clashes. But unfortunately, there was no clashes between the supporters of the convicted UDP leader and the paramilitary. But basically, you know, they were convicted because the judge said that they failed to open their defense, and then the leader, you know, was very angry with the court, you know, failing to recognize the court, and also the lawyers during the process of the trial walked out. So the judge said this was disrespect to the court, and then, you know, with that, he will convict this accused person to 3 years imprisonment. And when you look at the trial commenced 3 months ago, and then the prosecution called only 14 or so witnesses. And all these witnesses are police officers who arrested these people. So at the close of the prosecution case, the court ordered the defense to open their defense, and they say no, because their fundamental rights have been violated and they did not recognize the legitimacy of the court. So the court was not very happy with the statement by the leader, so he decided to convict and sentence them to 3 years imprisonment.
These tensions and these convictions come at a time when the country is about to go in elections in December. Do you think the opposition now may fear to demonstrate peacefully?
Of course. It's almost four months to the polls now, and the major opposition party is in custody. And this is the only political party that has posed a potential threat to the ruling government. So their intention was to demoralize them, to kill their spirit ahead of the election, simply because the other opposition parties, which are less than 5%, you know, cannot pose any potential threat. So automatically, Jammeh is declared the winner of the December 20 election because the UDP leadership is already killed, and that is the only political party that poses a potential threat. We have seen that a new political party also came in now, and then most of the opposition parties are in fact divided over whether they will go to the December polls. Many of the opposition, close to four opposition, are saying they will not go to election with Jammeh if there is no electoral reform and if lawyer Dabo and co are still in jail. So automatically, Gambians might not in fact go to the election because already the opposition leader who can unseat Jammeh is already in jail.
Saini Marine is a Gambian journalist. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Dakar. As the curtain fell on the 2016 International AIDS Conference in South Africa on Friday, organizers challenged delegates to go back to their countries and start the hard work toward an ambitious goal, ending the pandemic by 2030. For VOA, Thuso Kumalo reports from Durban.
After 5 days of discussions on key topics like stopping new HIV infections, getting treatment for the infected, and finding a vaccine to end AIDS for good, it was time for delegates to return home on Friday. Despite the tremendous strides made since the first International AIDS Conference 21 years ago, the epidemic has killed tens of millions, infected tens of millions, and continue to infect millions more. More than 1 million AIDS-related deaths were recorded last year. 17 million infected people are receiving antiretroviral drugs, while 20 million more are going untreated. This led organizers of the conference to challenge all nations of the world and their citizens to stand up and turn the tide. Olive Chisana was the local co-chair of this year's conference.
We need to heed the call to start a social justice movement that aims to reinvigorate the HIV response, similar to the global anti-apartheid movement that we had.
South African Minister of Health Aaron Motsoaledi called for a global campaign led by young people to bring about a new generation free from HIV.
A global campaign led by young people is urgent. If we don't, we'll not be able to achieve a generation free of HIV and AIDS by 2030.
The United Nations AIDS Agency emphasized that implementation of all issues agreed at the conference was key in ensuring AIDS is eliminated. The incoming president of the International AIDS Society, Linda Gail Becker, made a passionate plea to donors.
Whether people live or die in many countries will depend on how donors respond to the Global Fund's call to action. Lives depend on the Global Fund.
The message to all delegates was simple and clear. The conference might be over, but the hard work has just begun. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Durban.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, men in relationships. What should they do to keep them going and flourish? Join hosts Sande Shomari and his guests discussing men in relationships. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Baby, from Freetown to Lagos, just go. Let's get, get. I know go shoot by you, no shoot by. I know go shoot shoot you, no shoot shoot. No believe to me, no believe to me. Oh yeah, G Joe, oh yeah, G Joe. I know go shoot by you, no shoot by. I know go shoot shoot you, no shoot shoot. Oh yeah, G Joe, I'm gonna no believe to me. Baby, oh baby, baby. Come to my party, you and your party, baby, come away from you. No, they form shy for us. Every other day, we count money. Every one's day, they die for we. Up in the club, we high for tree. At every town, they go call it for we. I know go shoot by you, no shoot by. I know go shoot shoot you, no shoot shoot. No believe to me, no believe to me. Oh yeah, G Joe, oh yeah, G Joe. I know go shoot by you, no shoot by. I know go shoot shoot you, no shoot shoot.
You know. money in the Ghana must go. Oluwa say me ghetto boy blow. Boy and me, cash to them, Rastamamba for them. Tell them say run for them, sugar boy. Give them the run, and you know. And we live for the party, for nobody. We live for the party. Oh Lord have mercy, we live for the party. No, you no send nobody. I say we live for the party. Oh Lord have mercy. Hola, hola, we popping bottles. Not kill myself, but lady tonight. Are you sure you can take this love? DJ jam this song, all my people sing along. We live for the party, for nobody. We live for the party. Oh Lord have mercy, we live for the party. No innocent, no. I say we live for the party. Oh Lord have mercy.
Dance, baby, shake, shake, yeah. I'm a hot duck, you know. Hallelujah, Hosanna, girl, you I want to. Kill your body, banana, sweet in my heart. Oh. When you dance, you do very well. Give me love, is forever. Oh. Want to sing you the makosa, oh, yeah. Where your mama do? Where your papa do? Where your sister do? Yeah. Where your brother do? Come with the wheezy, I come with the video, yeah. Baby, dance it like say you do my music video.
I say if not all I'm all, I'm can't change it,
yeah.
Can't change it. Mathematics can't solve it,
yeah. Can't solve it.
Snap, I cannot shoot it, yeah. But the DJ can slam it, so that me and you can dance it, too.
I love you, baby. I love you today.
dance all queen. Me and you forever. Is it the picture I visualize? Oh, I don't know what I feel. I don't know if it's love. Girl, if you take a look at it, my heart, oh, girl, I want you more. Where your mama dey? Where your papa dey? Where your sister dey? Song for you, yeah.
Big Sponsor.
And your baby belly, tell I have to change my ways. I tell you, yeah.
Myself, buddy, pray for my baby.
Give up, I'm gonna you carry belly for me, oh.
Myself, buddy, pray for my baby.
Give up, oh, you friend, no more wrong. But then your father is violent.
Oh, let me tell you,
jumbo, we'll be fine, daddy, oh. Body is black dot. He's a big character. Jumbo. I bet no bet for me. Oh, body is violent.
Oh, let me tell you.
Jumbo. We'll be fine, mommy. Oh, body is black dot.
He's a big character.
Jumbo. I don't get so no more. Amaka, you know. Oh. Come on, Yoruba, let me know. If your papa no want us to marry, your woman or you do. No, girl, I'm down for you, don't forget. The love me, I get it for you. Mama, no go compare.
Be myself.
Pray for my
baby.
Be baby broke as long as you love me. Girl, I dare ya.
Be myself.
Girl, I dare ya.
Pray for
my baby. Oh, lonely friend, no more wrong. But then, your father is violent.
Jumbo,
we'll be fine, mommy. Oh, boy, is black belt. She's a big character. Jumbo, I don't get so no more.
Yeah.
pussy girl, follow me, eh. Your daddy, your mommy, but don't tell me I want to see.
Yeah.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Kaseyes Martin, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, what gives the child the itch has already given him the fingernails for scratching it. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A new project to strengthen the organizational and technical capacity of Cambodian civil society organizations and grassroots networks was announced on July 7th by the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. The Cambodian Civil Society Strengthening Project, or CCSS project, awarded to the East-West Management Institute, will help civil society organizations improve their management, planning, and analytical skills while enabling them to play a more active role in Cambodia's economic and political development. We place a great emphasis on supporting civil society because an informed and active citizenry is the bedrock of a healthy democracy, said Chargé d'Affaires Julie Chung. We hope that this project will help Cambodia's civil society to be even more effective in shaping a constructive and respectful conversation about laws and policies that affect the lives of ordinary Cambodians, she added. The five-year, $9 million CCSS project will help civil society organizations by demonstrating how to establish proven management structures, such as boards of directors, organizational lines of communication, standard operating procedures, and human resources management systems. The project offers small grants for important work, such as monitoring land rights cases, assisting victims of gender-based violence, and supporting the legal protection of Cambodia's rich natural resources. The grants will also fund research activities such as public opinion polls and social economic assessments that can help civil society organizations better target their services. The CCSS project is an important part of USAID's support to Cambodia. It encourages civil society organizations to promote government accountability. At the same time, the project emphasizes the value of local solutions to Cambodia's development challenges, while putting civil society organizations on a path toward sustainability. The United States is proud to work with its partner Cambodia to help build civil society in Cambodia to improve the lives of the Cambodian people and people throughout the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.